Bull. Anyway,
if this was 83, you'd really be too.
Yeah, exactly. If it was 1983, I would have like a giant boombox and a microphone, and I'd be pushing buttons and rewinding. And anyway, so we've had Baruch Hashem over the years a lot of shiurim here in the house, whether it's a shiur, whether it's Tisha B'Av, and it's always meaningful for me to be able to learn together. So many of you have been here on multiple occasions, and some of you, it's your first time, and we should always join together to learn and to grow. So I want to have the opportunity this evening to learn a little of the Torah from two of the people in my life. How are you? So I should extend a mazel tov to the Engelson family. Oh, a mazel tov, a mitzvah. And of course, the Steinhardt family on the upcoming wedding of Shane in a few weeks. Usually have some close together. So I want to share a little of the Torah of two of the most important figures in my life, Rav Kook and Rav Futner. Obviously, I did not meet either one of those. Rav Kook was Nifter in 1925, and Rav Futner in the 1970s. But as far as shaping a certain just perspective about Yahadus, a certain way of thinking about the soul, a certain way of connecting to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And there are people in the world that when they pick up Rav Kook and Rav Futner, especially Rav Kook, they say, like, what is this? You know, it doesn't speak to them at all. The language is esoteric. It might sound on face value a little bit fluffy in certain ways. It just feels like very disconnected, sort of, for certain people. I hope you're not one of those people. And if you are, then I need to do a better job, sort of, in the explication. But for other people who are searchers and yearners, and they feel certain, like, the soul just searching for a certain type of connection with the world, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu and Am Yisrael, then the Torah of Rav Kook and the expressions of Rav Kook, it's like just gold. It's like, it's the most meaningful, the most beautiful, the most expansive, the most poetic, the most lyrical, the deepest. And like, I don't know what my life would be without it. Like, it's, and I don't say that to exaggerate. Like, without a certain type of Torah, you feel that, you know, one's soul sort of has found nourishment in a, and I don't know how, like, the world survives that, without that, in a way, without a piece of Torah speaking to oneself. So I want to begin this discussion of Rav Kook by maybe asking a question about Simchas Purim, and Simchas Purim specifically this year. You know, as I think many of you know, I work as a Mashgiach Ruchani in Yeshiva University in NYU, and we had a meeting this week. Well, how do we want to do, like, Purim this year? You know, what does Simchas Purim look like? Should there be a Purim spiel? You know, this Chagiga, should we have a spiel where we're imitating whatever? And maybe the spiel is never a good idea. Maybe you should have, you know, we should rid all yeshivas of the spiel, which usually is, you know, mevaze somebody, right? But okay, should we do this? Should we encourage guys to not dress up? Should it be more serious? Should it be slower songs? Should it be, you know, how do you have, like, a Simchas Purim while also cognizant of the fact of Mesa Mutalafanov, that there are people that are in captivity and people who have died and people that are in battle, and I'm having a Purim Suda in my house. Everyone's welcome to stop by and have a chaim. And sort of thinking the same thing. How does, what's like sort of Simchas Purim, which usually is like so just like out there, you know, just with a certain amount of drinking and a certain amount of expression and a certain amount of hislavos and a certain amount of, like, what does that look like in a year like this year? So I was thinking about that a little bit, and the following marmikomos, at least to me, sort of paints a picture of a meaningful way of interacting and feeling about what the Simchas Purim looked like at a time of real national mourning and national struggle. I saw a close friend of mine, Rabbi David Gottlieb, was in, whatever, he's a rav in Rav Shemesh. All of his kids are in the army. And I saw him today, he was in the States for a few days. I said, how are your kids doing? He said, well, they don't have any, hello professor, They don't have any external visible scars, but they're carrying a lot of internal scars with them, and how to continue to sort of recognize that and connect to that. So I want to share a little bit of this piece of Rav Kook, and it might be well known to some of you because they turned it into a song. Anything that has a song attached to it, the world's going to know, you know, because once like, you put music, so then, you know, that's the only way you can remember something. If you start to remember something, you can't remember it, but it's a song, so then, and this song that appears in a few different places, it appeared originally in Rav Kook's maybe most esoteric, Kabbalistically driven sefer called Orot HaKodesh, and it also is in a sefer called Shmona Kvatzim. So this is from Orot HaKodesh, and has anyone here, by a show of hands, who here has learned Rav Kook before? Yeah, some, a little bit? Yeah, well, okay, fine. Hi, Yochanan, how are you? By the way, if you feel comfortable, everyone can move in here a little bit. Shalom, how are you? Yes, he's an old Rav Kook, not old, but he's an old Rav Kook Talmud. Not back from the 20s, but, you know, an old soul. But just we'll mention again, the language is almost impossible at times. And my Rebbe, Rabbi Weinberger, whenever he gives a share of Rav Kook, he says like Be'erech, like more or less. Like this is like more or less like what we think Rav Kook is talking about. What's that? Rabbi Weinberger, sure. Yeah, your Rebbe, he's half of Klai Yisrael's Rebbe, but you're the original Talmud, you know. Anyway, so he says the following. He says, Im Tirtza Ben Adam. And I just want you to sort of like almost like fall into the words and almost like allow yourself to just experience almost an image of what Rav Kook looks like as he says this. He says, Ben Adam, a child of man, Im Tirtza, if you so wish, if you so desire, there's something very accessible to you. There's something that's very near to you that could be there. And by the way, where does the language of like Ben Adam comes from? Who used the language? What's that?
Ben Adam, Al-Hanidam.
Right. So from Yecheskel. Right? So Yecheskel spoke about Ben Adam, and that even like in lowest moments and in the Gola, like the whole idea of Yecheskel is that he could still access Nevuah. And he called people towards like being a ben adam, which means like there's a chashivas to a human being, even the human being who's like struggling, even the human being who's entering into exile, even the human being who's exposed themselves to chait of all variety. A person is still like a ben adam. A person still has like a certain godless to it. Histakel, what does histakel mean? It means like to really not just like see, but to really look. To look upon, to gaze upon, Bior Hashchina, the light of God's presence. B'chol Hayukum, that a person sees in every ounce, in every piece of, in every inch of creation. Histakel be'eden achayim hashemayim. Look at the Eden HaChayim, just the beauty of life, the Ne'imus, the Adinus of life, Hashemayim. What does that mean? What's Chayim Hashemayim? Look at the life, which is like the life of the heavens, but in this world. Like we're living a life of a Chayim Hashemayim, that everywhere around us there's godliness, there's the presence of Shemayim, even in this world. Echem Mispalshim Bechol Pina Vizavis Shebechayim. How that life of godliness, of the Or Hashchina, of the Chayim Hashemayim, the life of transcendence and of godliness of the heavens, Echem Mispalshim, how it infuses Bechol Pina, every corner, Vizavis, in every corner, Shebechayim. Haruchaniim v'achamarim. It infuses spiritual life. It infuses physical life. Sheneged einei besarcha. That is right in front of your eyes. V'neged einei ruchacha. That is right keneged your spirit. And I want maybe for take a second to think about what that looks like. person can live a life where totally blinded, right? Totally, spoke about the Nachman of Breslov, said that a person can't see anything because all they can see is the coin at the end of their nose. I think when Rav Nachman said that, he was talking about the fact, specifically, that when a person maybe is sort of so hyper-focused on their maybe career and worrying about finances, which we all have to worry about, so you don't see anything. But if a person really wanted to, I can see the beauty in everything. I can see the creativity of mankind building this bookshelf and electricity that was created and the spirit of godliness that rests in every man. And the spirit of creativity and the beauty of the world and the beauty of nature. Everywhere a person would look, they would see the presence of a Kodesh Baruch Hu that's like there. And it's a matter of histakel, imtirza. Do we want to see that? You know, when I see Sanford or Rusty or Sam or anybody else, like, do I want to see the beauty and the chayim hashmaimim, the life of like the heavens that's in every pina and every zavis? Continue. He's ponein bepilei hayitzira. Understand, look at, assess the what's pilei hayitzira. What's the best way to translate that?
The wonders of creation.
The wonders of creation. Thank you, Professor. Zebechaye ha'elokus shalahem. That the life of godliness that's not of creation. Lo b'tor eze tachnit keha. What does that mean? It's a difficult language. Lo b'tor eza tachnit keha. Shememarchakim metzigim negere necha. Anybody? Anyone know what that means?
Not for any vague.
What's that?
Not for any vague purpose that's distant from you.
It's not some vague or weak tachnit program or purpose. Like, oh yeah, like something distant, you know, when we think about the greatness of creation. Oh yeah, I once saw in a biology book, but it's like distant. I mean, Shemer Chakim Mitzigim Neyanecha, that's like somehow like distant from your eyes. Kiim Da'as HaMetzius Shata Chayba, but it's something that's so close to us. And maybe even as we're reading this, sort of think about, if I don't mind me saying so, my oldest child, my Uva, who most people here know, so she, Baruch Hashem, she's almost 28 at this point. I don't know how that happens. All of a sudden you wake up and some old human, you know. I remember when she was born, and it was like a little bit of complication in childbirth, as in Shari Tzedek Hospital, which was probably not the place back in 96 to have complications in childbirth. And I remember coming into the NICU and watching her breathing with tubes and tubes coming through her nose and coming through her mouth, and everything was here, and like this little pitzkel. She wasn't so little, but, you know. And then it just made me start thinking at 24 of like the miraculous nature of life, like bringing the child into the world and like watching her young, like 2-hour-old lungs trying to ingest oxygen. But like every moment of our life, that's not something that should be distant from us. Every moment of our life, like I'm conscious of my own breath, my own body, my own every piece of me. That's what Cook is saying. That's imtirtze ben adam histaka bor hashchina b'chol hayukum. Not something that's distant from us, but rather as hametzias shata chayba. What else can we look at? Doz atzmecha v'yes olamecha. Look at yourself. And something Rav Kook mentions in many places. Look at the fact that Kosh Baruch Hu resides within the soul of each person. Da'as Atzmecha, to know one's own godless. V'yes Olamecha, to know your life. Da'as Hegyone Halev Shalcha. Know the, what's Hegyone Halev Shalcha? It's not easily translated. Anybody? What is? Like, know the thoughts and the reflections of your own heart. The yearnings of your own heart. B'shel kol hogev choshev. Know the yearnings and thoughts of other people, other lumdom. Matzas mekor chayim shekbikarbecha. Discover and find the mekor hachayim, the source of life, shebekirbecha, that's inside of you. Vishemimaulucha, that is beyond you, on top of you. Shemisvivecha, that's around you. Espeire hadras achayim, to know and to look at the grandeur of life, sha'ata shari betocham, that you're living among them. What else can a person do? A person who's imtirtze ben adam? Ha'ava shebekirbecha he'la osa, the love that is a part of you, lift up, he'la osa, lift up that love, l'shoresh, to the root, oza, v'ednas tivarta, you can elevate every emotion that a person has to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. The person says, you know what, I love this steak. I know, like, I'm sure like most people, I'm a huge fan of going to Fireside, especially if any of you want to treat me to Fireside, it'd be even greater. I'm just joking. But, you know, I say, I love this steak. You know, I love this. I love, I don't know, I love the Mets. I love this. I love this. It's all sorts of things that people maybe love in the world. And the Chuk says, Ha'ava shebekirbecha, any love that you have in your life, any strong emotion you have in your life, any feeling you have in your life, any midah you have in your life, hela osa, elevate that. L'shorish aza, to its strong root, ve'ednas tivarta, and the beauty of its glory, so to speak. It's a story that they say about the Rebbe Rashab. The Rebbe Rashab was, of course, the fifth, right? The fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe. And his son was Rabbi Yaakov Yitzchak, right? The father-in-law of the seventh Lubavitcher Rebbe. And if you ever see a picture of the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Friedrich Rebbe, he was a beautiful, beautiful person. He was like a real, like, you know, somebody had like a real, like, not just Hadras Pundit, but such like a presence. Everyone knows what the Friedrich Rebbe looks like? You know, you can see a picture every day on the Rabbi Ives wall.
Yeah.
Right? So he's like a real, just, and as a child, he was like a beautiful, radiant child, right? So at the bar mitzvah of the Friedrich Rebbe, so his father, the Rebbe Rashab, presented him with a kuntzris of thoughts about Avas Hashem. And he called it, I believe, a Hasidish kiss, something along those lines. And he told his son, the Friedrich Rebbe, like how this came about, right? He said, it came about that when you were an infant, he says at the bar mitzvah, he said, I wanted your mother fell to sleep. So I used to learn with my chavrusa, like right next to your crib, and we would learn together. And such a beautiful image. Like the Rebbe Rashab wants to make sure his wife slept. So he has his and chavrusa, I imagine they learn quietly, or sort of repeated. It was like sort of learning, like whispering next to the crib of the Friedrich Rebbe. And right in the learning, Rebbe Rashab said, he said, my chavrusa said, Rebbe, I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but Rebbe Yaakov Yitzchak is so beautiful. Such a beautiful child. And he was, you know. And he said that at that moment, Rebbe Rashab said, at that moment, my heart was so filled with love for you, I thought I needed to elevate that love. And again, it's enough just to love your kids. And to want to hug. Like, I wanted to elevate that feeling. And that night, I wrote this kuntzris, you know, about Avas Hashem. Like, you were the vehicle, that love. And I had that love, and I wanted to elevate that love. Then he presented the kuntzris at his bar mitzvah. So Rav Kook says, Ha'ava shebekirbecha, the love that's inside of your heart, helosa, any strong emotion that a person has, connect that to the Kadosh Baruch Hu, connect that to the Or Hashchina b'chol ha'yikum, harchiv l'chol sarvoseha l'chol oshed nishmas chayel olamim asher ratzutz ha'makom shol ha'hege gorim miut zahara. Okay, we'll sort of skip over that line for now. Let's just skip to the next page for a second, if you don't mind. Oops, sorry about the... okay? And then he says, Alei l'mala alei, you, ben Adam, in tirtze, Alei l'mala alei. Everyone have it? Page Dalad? You have the capacity to be transcendent in your life, to be mis'aleh in your life. I want to tell you, if you don't mind, something so meaningful that happened to me last week. I had something that really had a big impact on my life, which is both Yehuda Flores is here and Igor is here and others. So I started davening at Or Shlomo, the Vasikin Minyan, right? Which, by the way, right now, you don't have to be such a gever. Like, I think Vasikin now is like 7:10, which is basically, later than a lot of... So now, like, you're a big talker. You know, you're going to the 6:40 Vasikin Minyan. But it's really such a... Yochanan Sonnen is there on a Friday night. Such like a beautifully uplifting way of, like, beginning one's day. You know, it's just filled with Ava and Simcha and, like, just a real... uplifting davening. This is like a few weeks ago. I had the chance to have like a Seder of Gemara afterwards, learned for about 40 minutes. Came home, jumped on the Peloton for, half an hour, 40 minutes. And then drove into the city, like over the Tappan Zee Bridge, which is usually the way that I go in the morning. And that feeling of beginning one's day with Vasikin and then learning and then exercising and feeling a little better in your body and then driving over the Tappan Zee Bridge and like the beauty of the Hudson on a beautiful morning. It was that sense of like the shleimus of like just everything. Just like that sense of seeing like the Or HaShechina b'chol hayukum. That's what Rav Kook means. It is alei l'mal alei. Like continue to try to have those moments of seeing beyond just sort of like the one inch in front of our face, but just those constant moments of personal elevation. Kikoch azlecha. You're not small. You're not limited. You're not diminished. You're a ben adam. You have a koch az. Yeshlecha kanfei ruach. You have a kanfei ruach. You have like a spirit, a transcendent spirit. Kanfei nisharim avirim. You have sort of like wings of eagles, strong wings of eagles. Al tikach eshbam, don't destroy them. Like, don't destroy the spiritual capacity of alei l'mala alei. Don't disregard them. Don't ignore them. Penikasha kulach, because if you do so, then your own spiritual yearnings, if you don't take advantage of them, will come back to destroy you. Anybody know what he means by that? That if you are tikachesh bam, if you in some way destroy that spiritual piece for yourself, if you sort of ignore it or if you negate it, so then pen yikacheshu l'cha, like then those spiritual yearnings will come and in a way negate or destroy you as a person. Anybody have a feeling what that means? Anybody?
Yeah.
So we're not going to push the professor, but
I'm not going to explain.
But listen, if a person thinks about what's usually at the root of even, let's say, addiction or addictive behaviors, it's somebody that's like searching and yearning, right? Maybe a person, and as most people here know, recovered from addiction is becoming more God-centered, it's becoming more connected to God. Addiction usually is a person who's spiritually yearning for connection and for godliness and for meaning and for real relationships, and they can't find that. And in its place becomes finding that sort of somewhere else, meaning the soul yearns for something. And either that's going to be found in a place that's nourishing and uplifting, or it's going to be found in broken relationships. It's going to be found, at the bottom of a bottle. It's going to be found in sort of all sorts of codependent and a healthy behavior. So either we turn towards and lean towards sort of the spiritual essence of man that sees godliness everywhere and alei, or we ignore that sort of at our own peril in a way, and the depression that comes when those spiritual kochos are ignored. Derashosam, seek them. V'yibsachu l'cha miyad, and they will be there for you immediately. Yeah.
is kind of like a cautionary.
Sure.
Don't deny your spirituality.
Yeah.
Then when you want it, it won't be there for you.
Sure.
But then he sort of says, but on the other hand, if you're Dorje, then you're going to find it right away.
Right.
There's still hope. Don't.
For sure. Yeah. And something that, by the way, in general, when looking at Rukh's writings, is that it's like filled with hope. You know, sometimes you'll have, like, even the Tanya or other places, like, if you turn away from God, like, you know, you're doomed. Like, there's, like, a certain amount of sort of either you're in or you're out, and then you've dug yourself into the Piskei Gehenna. Like, you would never have that in Rav Kook. You know, Rav Kook
is always it.
But it's always it. And then, like, even when you're not in, like, how can you, like, elevate that? And then, and to some degree, that's sort of what got Rav Kook in trouble, was that he was always in. Oh, these chilonim who are playing soccer on Shabbos, oh, these are the people that are going to take their energies and build the future, gula. Like, everything was always like an opportunity. And even like Shviras, a kalim, was an opportunity. It was never like, where is the holiness in that moment of Shvira? That's why Rav Kook so much speaks to me personally, but to a whole generation of people that in some way feel either broken or lonely or searching or... You know, and then, like, how do we sort of, in a way, capture and elevate that? Now, before we turn to Rav Hutner, let's maybe give, like, an overall thought and assessment of the piece we just saw, and so many other pieces like this. Is the basic understanding, you know, that, again, to go back and read the language, a man has the capacity, in Tirtz of an Adam, how they integrate. It's like this, it's a picture of this incredible spiritual universe. But I don't know about you, and I think, if I can maybe be self-reflective and honest, I'm a pretty sort of, I guess, spiritual person, whatever that means. You know, I think I'm a spiritually alive person. I've always been, even as a kid, like a very spiritually intense person in a way. But while that's true, also maybe like cut off at moments from that full experience of what Rav Kook is describing, right? Just sort of like living your life, you know, and doing what you do. And I'm blessed to have a life where I'm involved in the Avodas HaKodesh, but just... You know, going to work and paying your bills and sort of muttering my way through a Maariv. And then halfway through Maariv, I'm like, did I daven Maariv already? No, that was Milcha. Maybe, wait a second, maybe. And then you're sort of sitting there in the middle of Shmona Esrei trying to remember, you know, wait a second, do I say Mashiach Ruach? What month is this? Am I don't even know what's going on. Like, just like this, a certain, which is totally understandable. I wouldn't say being lost to oneself, but sort of cut off from so much of that. And it's almost like by definition, you know, Rav Kook was able to live a life where he was like totally, I said he died in 1925, he died in 1935, excuse me. He was like so alive, you know. And you have people like that. They're like in this continuous state of aliveness. But I know for myself, it's like so... much of the time, like you have these like brief glimpses that I mentioned a couple weeks ago in the Tappan Zee Bridge, but so often it's just a certain deadness. And so I'm conscientious of sort of that neshama, and conscientious of being a ben adam, but so cut off from being the person who is histakel biyukum, histakel borashnina, and ale lamala ale. It's like so inaccessible sometimes. So I want to just read, if you don't mind, two pieces from Rav Hutner, and then we'll wrap up. These are very short pieces. Okay, I know the hour is late and there's a lot going on. So Rav Hutner says, this is on Purim, it's Maimar Chav Zayin. For those of you, again, I know Yossi and others learn a lot of Rav Hutner, pieces on Purim are shorter and easier. So therefore I like them more, because I can understand them from start to finish, opposed to usually we're halfway through, I start losing the thread sometimes. And then, like, you know, you get back into it. But so Rav Hutner says the following, and then we'll tie it all back together. So this is Vayikra Moshe. Okay? So obviously this is at the beginning of next week's parsha, right? That Hashem Baruch Hu called Moshe by Yikro Moshe. Moshe didn't just go like vacilling into like the Mishkan by himself into the tabernacle himself. He had to be called. So Mefurish Bezeh Shafila Moshe Rabbeinu, that even Moshe Shahayu Nihirin Lokol Harazi Olam Shabaprate Melechas HaMishkan, that it was absolutely clear and evident to him all of the secrets of the world, Shabaprate Melechas HaMishkan, that were involved in the specifics and the details of Melechas HaMishkan. But despite the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was living in this like elevated place, so Mikol Makom Lo Nichnas L'Socha B'Lo Kriya. And by the way, not everyone says this. Rashi in this parsha does not say that, but this is the sheet of the Ramban. He couldn't enter into the Mishkan until he was beckoned, until he was called, right? And what's the famous Medrash about this, about being called into a place? The Medrash says in Medrash Rabbah, in several places, Shimhaya Nichnas B'Li Kriya, if I would enter into, or if he would have entered into the Mishkan without being called, ki az haisa alav taina, there would have been the claim against him, shel tamud chacham b'lidas, that he's a tamud chacham without any, how does one define the word das, the best way of defining it? What do you think?
Knowledge.
What's that?
Knowledge.
It's not really knowledge in this case. What's a das? A tachoni ladam das, and like sort of maybe more of a Chabad type of
self awareness.
Well, self awareness is definitely part of it, but that's maybe sort of a specific piece of das. What's like a good English word? What's that? I would say it's like more discernment, right? It's like a certain discernment of how to take sort of chokhma. And again, if you start to look in the Baal Tanya and Perikimos, this is sort of what he says, like, how do I like apply chachma into every situation? And that's a person who's a bar das, right? It's not just being smart, it's not having wisdom, it's having a certain discernment.
Like insight?
What's that?
Insight?
Insight and discernment, yeah. Yeah, insight, to me at least, feels like it's not always in the area of decisions. Like, I can have insight to myself, but who cares? Like, das is, I actually know how to apply something in a real world type of way. In my behavior, in my choices, like that's das, right? Bar das is a person who just like knows, understanding situation, discernment situation. Now, if Moshe Rabbeinu would have just walked into the Mishkan, it would have shown that he had no discernment. He didn't know where he belonged and where he didn't belong. He's like, I belong everywhere. Let me go over there. He wouldn't be able to sort of almost like apply his knowledge. And so, therefore, if he wasn't called, back to the third line, Shimhaya Nichnas B'li Kriya Ki Az Haisal of Taina. This is explained in the Gemara, in the Yushalmi and Brachos. Why do they have, in the first Bracha, obviously, Makashas, why do we have Havdalah and Chonein Hadas? So the Bavli gives one reason. The Yushalmi says, that if a person doesn't have Atachonein Ladam Das, they don't know how to make discernment. They don't know how to make a difference between Kodesh and Chol, right? It was, I guess, one of my tainas in a way when I was like a rav of a shul. And this isn't a function of KBY. KBY was great. I loved being there. But people without like a sense of das, of like place, right? I mean, a guy that can sort of stand in shul and talk really loudly about something inappropriate. Like, you're not a bar das. Like, you don't realize. Lazy, this wasn't you or Sanford or anybody else, but like, do you know like where you are? Like, you're in a Makom Kadosh. So Makom Kadosh, you don't have the same conversation. Maybe you shouldn't be having those conversations anywhere, but you don't have the same conversation, you know, in the hallways you do in the shul or in your house. Like, there's a das of like where I am, you know. So if a person doesn't have das, so they can't be madil between any space. Every space is the same. I can't discern between anything in my life. Okay. The Hasbaras Inyon Zeh, Chazra V'Nishnas Kamapamim B'Beis Midrashenu. We talked about this many times, he said, in Chaim Berlin, in the Shmuzim. B'Bnei She'ikr Skulasa Shel Hadas, the real sort of like beauty and reward of Das, he bekoach ha-histabkus v'his kashrus ha-gondos b'socha. Das allows a person to connect to certain things and separate themselves from other things. Das allows for connection and then removal. Okay? V'adam, let's read through this quickly. V'adam she'enu yodea l'hafrid es atzmo mi'inyon she'enu shayachlo. A person who doesn't know to separate themselves from something that they don't have shaychitz to, that right? So bal korcho she'enu yodea l'iskasher im'inyon shayachlo. If you don't know how to separate from that which you should not be connected to, you're not going to know who to connect to, what you should be connected to. V'hu adin l'idach gisa. If a person has the capacity of connecting with to sort of focus his energies, something that is shaykh to him, then we know that he can separate himself from something that's inappropriate. If anybody sort of ever think about anybody in their life, I'm asking you for names, somebody that doesn't sort of know their place, they're not a bardas. They don't know who they should connect with and who they should separate from. So I think people here know, like I work as like a therapist, right? So like I have a client, because he was like so insecure, like when he was in yeshiva, he was always trying to get in the middle of the conversations between the Rosh and Yeshiva. You know, you have two Rosh Yeshivas standing somewhere, and he was like always like just standing there, like up by the Rosh Yeshiva shtenders, you know, trying to sort of like, he's like 19 years old, but he's trying to sort of get involved in every... Like, you're not a bardas. And it obviously comes from being in a lot of pain, right? Because you're probably so insecure. And in this person's case, his father left him when he was a young age. So he didn't know, like, what to connect to, what to separate from. Versus, like, so that's the idea of being, like, a bardas. Okay? So v'zeh ma she'amru, im'ein das, if you're not a bardas, havdala minayin, how will you know what to separate from? U'memela, im haya moshe nichnas b'likriya, if Moshe Rabbeinu had entered into the Mishkan without being called, this would have proven ki eino mavdil z'atzmo mimach mishadayin lo nizbarra shechusol b'makom zeh. He wouldn't know how to separate from a place where it wasn't clear yet whether Moshe Rabbeinu was allowed to be in the Mishkan. Right? He wasn't given that instruction yet. V'al kein haisa alav hataina, then he would have had the taina shetam chacham shein bodas ki rak hakriya, only by being called. Haisa habirur al yachas hamakom hazeh lav. Only by being called do we say, you know what, Moshe Rabbeinu, you belong in the Mishkan. V'rak liachar shekodem hakriya, only once there was that call, pala bo hadas b'koach havdal sheba. Okay, so hine liachar hakriya, after he was called, pala bo hadas b'koach hadveik sheba. He knew that he's allowed to connect to that. Okay, to know where I belong, where I don't belong. V'yich...
Yes, every time he went into the Mishkan, was this the first
time? It was the first time, right? I mean, the first, like, once he knew he belonged there, so he knew he belonged there. And that's part of being a bardas, is saying, I do belong there, right? Person's not a bardas, so they say, oh, I don't belong. I don't, that shir, I don't belong in that shir. Shmuel's an old Bostoner, knows a lot of the Torah. If you want to know the Torah of the Rav in this neighborhood, so you can go to Shmuel. Not all of it, but a lot of it, right? So it's like, you have some guys that said, okay, I belong in the Rav Shir. You don't belong in the Rav Shir. You know, like, I'm really sorry. Like, you're going to sit there for 5 years, have no clue what's going on. And then you have other people where they spend 5 years, I don't belong, I don't this. No, you do belong, right? Like, being a bardas is knowing where you don't belong and knowing sort of like where you do belong as well and having a certain sense of yourself, which is sort of what you're speaking about, Nissan, as far as like insight, right? Okay, and I love this line. That's why I have it the bottom line. Who believe in Shotamir Chachamim. In the hearts of a Talmid Chacham, Mevakshe, just to turn it over a little bit, okay, Mevakshe Hashem, somebody, like, in the hearts of a person who's Mevakshe Hashem, Locheshes Tamid HaChashasha. What does that mean? Locheshes Tamid HaChashasha? It's great, like, Hebrew. His Hebrew is beautiful. What?
Lingering suspicion, whispering in the back.
There's a whispering in, like, the suspicion, the lingering suspicion. Pen v'ulai... Whispering in the ears of every Yuri Shemayim and every person who is like a Mevakshe Hashem is, now maybe you don't belong over there. You know, maybe it's not for you. Maybe you're overstepping. Maybe you shouldn't be. I remember when I went to Rosenzweig Shir, part of me said I should go. Part of me said, no, you don't belong there. I'm always wondering, maybe it's not my place, right? What's that? Imposter syndrome. And maybe, like, I'm being a Balgaiva. Maybe I want to go to that cheer because I want everyone to see this. And if I go to that cheer, maybe I'm going to get that shidduch. Somebody called me today that a certain family in a certain community, they said, no, my daughter can't marry that guy because he's in that cheer in YU. I'm like, are you joking? I'm like, are you like, so maybe a person feels like I'm going to that cheer because maybe I'm going to get a so you're always concerned what your motivations are. Maybe I'm an imposter. I don't belong there. I'm not so smart. It's like, it's always being lochesh tamid. And if other people are not a bar das, like, you never really have that. I know I have this for myself, by the way, because I started learning chassidus. So, and I want to sort of like know my place, what I should be learning. So I want to finish the tanya first. And then everyone will get like all these like yearnings to start learning Rav Nachman and start learning this. And I have to tell myself, you know what, like, maybe I'm not ready for that. Maybe, like, let me sort of finish this, and then I'll be going to that. And then, but you're always, like, wanting to push yourself, but at the same time also saying, you know what, like, take things slow, one thing at a time. And then that's like a bar das. So bar das is considered, like, find that middle ground, so to speak. So the person is, like, whispering in his ear, right? And maybe from the very fact that you're sort of trying to maybe push your way into something, maybe a person says, well, you see, I'm not a bar das, or I'm going somewhere I don't belong, so I'm going to pull myself back. El shekol zeh, this is the line I want to mention, el shekol zeh hu bishar yimos hashana, that idea of pulling yourself back because you say that's an aspiration beyond my head, that's like the rest of the year. Aval bishas simchas purim, but when it comes to Purim, Shemahalich Hanes Haya Al Yidei Halo Nikresi Lavo El Hamelach. The whole Nes came about when Esther said, I don't belong in that place. I don't belong in front of the Melach. That's not my place to go to. That's what she told Mordechai. And we know, V'chol Malkum Shenemar Hamelach. Anytime it says Hamelach, Stam B'melach Malchem Lach Mekos Medaber. It's also an allusion to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Esther's saying, I don't belong in front of the Melech, God, Achashverosh. Bahari stayed there, but yet she was pushed to do it, and she was able to break through that barrier and actually appear from the Melech. Hari stayed there, had Hagash Shel Simchas Purim Mechayiv. Therefore, the whole nature of the Nes tells us, Ki mi shehishtokechos hakadusha dochefes osapnima. That even when sometimes we feel that our yearnings for Kedusha, it pushes us inwards. We say, lo magia li. Like, that's not me. Like, I'm too small for that. But Purim tells us, zocha l'mitzias chen. You know what? A person can have a mitzias chen. He can be sort of smiled upon, right? V'adarabba, not just does he have a mitzias chen, but moshitim lo as Sharvit HaZahav. We say, we extend to the person the Sharvit HaZahav. On Purim, don't hold back. Don't be hesitant. You belong, whatever those upper chambers are of transcendence and spirituality and Kirvas Elokim, where you might normally say, like, I don't belong there. No, Purim, we extend the Sharvit HaZahav. Vim Tomar, you might say, Halo ala nichnas belikriya. But normally, if a person goes into a place they don't belong, we say, Nemar alav she'en baldas, that you're not a bardas. But that's only when it comes to most of the year. By Purim, we say anybody wants. V'yesh lomar adraba halo b'simchas Purim ein heder hadas kisar klau. It's not a problem. You sort of connect fully with the Kodesh Baruch Hu in the way that you want to ad lo yada. So therefore, according to Rav Huttner, and he says this so many places, what is Purim about? It's about normally feeling spiritual limitations and then sort of going beyond those spiritual limitations. I remember about a couple of years ago, I had a beautiful Purim Seudah at Rabbi Twersky's, where I was with Shmuel and others as well. It's like a person being able to say, like, I want to go beyond my normal sort of limitations of the neshama, so to speak. Let's just do one more very quick maimar in Rav Huttner. What's that?
Same concept, Kol Peshet Yad.
Exactly, Kol Peshet Yad, exactly. Right, and he says about the same thing about that case also. Kol Peshet Yad, like, we don't turn anybody away. We say, you think you need tzedakah, you think that you're, okay. So then, like, everybody's sort of sense of themselves comes to fruition on that day without having to investigate it. Like, this is who I feel that I am.
That's also called
in a spiritual, exactly. And it's all part of the same thing.
What do you do with there's a sad to say that the person has to bring themselves to the place without waiting for an invitation? If you're looking for something.
Yeah, I hear. That would sort of go against exactly what he just said. Yeah. Okay, let's do this last mimer. And this last mimer, by the way, is like difficult to say, especially if you grow up in like types of environments I did in YU and like a little more of like a Litvish setting, always very cognizant of like the Rambam's discussion of sort of anthropomorphism. So like, you have to sort of speak about certain types of concepts in a complicated way, but it's not just sort of, you know, learning certain Hasidic Sfarim. But even in Midrashim, we always speak about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like he had a machshava to create the world in a certain type of way, and then he had harata on that. Like, how do we talk about God's machshava and God's maisa, connecting God's machshava to the maisa? What does it mean that God changes his mind? By Yinochem, Melukim, etc. I mean, those are complicated areas. We're ascribing various sort of human types of characteristics to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So this sort of mimer runs into those same problems as well. Okay, Shai, we're going to be done in a few minutes. So the incredible, by the way, I just want to mention the Mishpachat Engelson and Mishpachat Steinhardt to come to a shir on a Thursday night. There's a lot of things going on, especially this type of material. Incredible kol kavod to you, and kol kavod to, as the Gemara says in Chagiga, the father that gets schar b'mivyehem. Sometimes b'kfiyah, sometimes b'ratzon, sometimes somewhere in the middle, but it will serve you well for the totality of your life. Okay, so the Rav Hunter says the following. So Yom Nekom Bilibi. The pasuk says in Yeshayahu, and it's a fascinating pasuk, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says there will be a day of nekama, day of vengeance, bilibi. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in his kaviyachol, in his heart, the concept of the future nekama for Klal Yisrael. Okay? The future of vengeance. V'yomru chachamim al zeh lavo lepuma lo galya. The chachamim said that the actual day of vengeance has not come, or has not been revealed to the mouth. It hasn't come to the mouth of God, it's only in the heart of God. So there's a separation between God's quote-unquote heart and God's mouth. Okay, Klomar. Also Yom Shabo Asid HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that day down the road, in the future, so Limkom Nikmasa Shokines Yisrael, in which there will be future vengeance and future what's in the comma? Future vengeance for Klal Yisrael. Also, Yom Na'utzu is hidden away bilavavo shel Kadosh Baruch Hu. It is like hidden away in the recesses of God's heart, kaviyachol, like you know, so to speak. V'gonuzhu also Yom. That day is what's gonuzhu. It's like hidden away. B'mamake hata'aluma sha'osolev. In the hidden depths of that quote unquote heart of God, it's like it's hidden away. Achlo yagia mimena shum giloi lefiv kaviyachol. Until there's really been no revelation, so to speak, in the mouth of God of that day of when it's going to be, of when it's happening, of how it's going to happen. It's only in the recess of God's heart. Okay. What's that?
What's this concept of taking the come? When does that take place?
So, if you see the Pesukim of Yeshayahu, the assumption is that it's Yimos Mashiach. Okay? So, he continues. V'chol zeh hu b'shar Yimos Hashana. Just like what we had in Maimar Chav Zayin. All that is in the rest of the year. Aval b'yom ha-purim, right? Shebo, nikhalu ha-yehudim, that on that day the Jews gathered, l'hino kemei ovehem, to bring vengeance against their enemies. Nekama zu, hugam nikmaso shel kaviyachol. This vengeance also is like the vengeance of God. Kaviyachol, this is God's vengeance. It came to fruition. It came to actualization. This became almost like the mouth of God actualizing B'nai Yisrael's nekama. B'yom zeh, on that day, nafla hamechitza ben halev v'hapeh shel kaviyachol. The mechitza dropped between the heart of God, namely, sometime down the road, okay, where God had in mind, so to speak, there would be nekama, and between God's mouth, where the actual nekama was taking place. Up until now, it was only in the realm of machshava. Now this became the world of maisa. There's a mechitza that dropped between the future and the actuality, between the heart of God and between the mouth of God. Okay, that mechitza dropped. Libo shel Kadosh Baruch Hu, now what God had intended, who carved ma'od lepiv b'yom ha'purim, became connected to God's actualization of that nekama. Right? Again, very difficult to speak about, but Kadosh Baruch Hu's lev and piv became connected. V'zuhi achas hata'imos, this is one of the reasons, sha'anu to'amim b'shichros l'purim. This is actually one of the reasons that people drink on Purim. Why is that? Shekein matzav hashichrus, the very nature of a person drinking, of course, not drinking in a way that's unsafe, who matzav is a state of being, shall siluk hamachitzos, of the removal of the boundaries and the borders and the divisions, ben apeva halev, between man's heart and between man's mouth. Okay? And therefore, a person, I know for myself personally, that I'll have friends call me every year. There's no pressure on anybody here. But people that never in 1,000 years would be sort of expressive, you know, and super affectionate. And then you get a sort of phone call, you know, Rabbi or Josh, I normally can't say this. I just want you to know that I love you, right? And it's very sincere, you know. It's very real. It's very beautiful. They normally wouldn't say it because normally there's so many different mechitzos, you know, and barriers and defense mechanisms and self-consciousness and emotional limitation and spiritual limitations. And then there's every once in a while in a person's life where the mechitzos between the lav and the peh become totally eliminated. And a person is just, that's obviously the idea of nichnas yayin yotza sod, just complete oneness of being. Okay? So these ideas, to me, sort of all feel deeply connected. Rav Kook speaks about the fact that Ben Adam can look into the Yikum and he can see the Or Hashchina in every pin of a person's life. And obviously, for an average person, not for Rav Kook, so that idea becomes so disconnected. My soul, my heart, my lave, so to speak, it yearns for that. But that's so removed from my normal experience. My normal day is just so removed from that. And then every once in a while in a person's life, there's the dropping of the mechitzos. So a person can experience fully the connection between the soul, the heart, the essence, the godliness, the Or Hashchina, and the rest of a person's life. And what Rufunder talks about over and over and over again is that Purim is that day of the dropping of mechitzos. Normally, a person needs to be called into a higher state of consciousness, into a higher state of the spirit. First, normally feels limited. But the very idea of Purim is that a person says, you know what, I don't have to feel limited. I can be sort of that full experience of the unity and the oneness of every piece of my being. Purim is that day where the lev and the pev of Kodesh Baruch Hu became unified. And therefore, By dint of imitatio dei, of his imitating Kodesh Baruch Hu, we create the total oneness of every piece of ourselves. Now, what made me think about that, specifically in the Purim of this year, and we'll conclude with that, is that there's also simcha, and the deepest simcha is the feelings of like unity. Simcha doesn't have to be a person jumping around on a chair with a lampshade on their head. You know, I don't know why whenever I sort of think about that image of frolicking, it has to do with a lampshade. I don't know if some old movie I saw back in the 1980s, which we will take up with this recording. But it doesn't have to be something idiotic. We had a Purim student in our house many years ago, and it was like a little bit too much. The lasting image of that Purim was a guy walking around for 3 hours talking into a coconut. We got a coconut for Purim student, for Shalach Manos. And this guy was already a couple sheets to the wind, and he wandered over to our dining room table. He picked up the coconut, and he's like, this is perfect. And then he walked around for the next 3 hours just having this ongoing conversation, like, with a coconut about every piece of his life.
You don't know what the coconut was telling him.
Maybe that we're dealing with much deeper issues here than Simchas Purim and Extreme, right? I mean, that's not what, like, Simchas Purim has to be, necessarily. Like, Simchas Purim and Simcha, on the deepest of levels, is a real sense of the unity of all things. It's the unity between the lev and the nefesh, together with the peh, together with behavior, together with the ability to see the beauty of the world. It's the unity of Am Yisrael. To sit at one's table, think about that very moment of soldiers in Gaza and a war coming with Hezbollah, like, there's a unity of one's neshama with Eretz Yisrael. There's an overwhelming sense of Avos Yisrael. There's a unity of us together with the Jews of all of history, going back to Matan Torah. It's a unity with one's family. There's a unity of the soul, but also allowing the body to be partners with the soul through food and through singing and through drink and through physical affection. There's a unity of all things. And when a person experiences that, which a person shouldn't every year, that is the deepest, deepest simcha that a person has in their life. And that's the deepest simchas Purim. Purim is the gateway and the entree for all of that. So in Mirchem this year, as we sort of sit down for our sudos, and we do so with an intentionality that's not just about having a great time and just maybe drinking something, and just we do so with intentionality that that Chazal have created and provided an opportunity to live, at least for a moment, with the words of Rav Kook. So just for a few hours, to live with the Or HaShechina that's in every person and every opportunity and every piece of food and everything that's around us, to see that and to connect with that. Imagine if we can experience that simcha on Purim of this year, if we can have that true simcha of the unity of all things in our life, the Mir Shashem we can look forward to and hearken in and look forward to a day of the unity of all of Am Yisrael in a rebuilt, unified Yerushalayim. Amen. Thank you, everyone.
I love you.